I have here this morning a relatively new box of Legos. When I was growing up, I unfortunately did not own any Legos. My parents never got me Legos. I had other building blocks. They were Japanese kinds, but I don't know, I guess they weren't quite the same thing. And so I envied other kids that owned Legos. One of the cool things, especially the space sets, the Star Wars sets, I really wanted those. All the explorations, imaginary explorations of distant planets, meeting alien life forms. Well, they're all the cool little vehicles that you can create. I also like the battery-operated ones, the little mechanical ones. Those always fascinated me too, but unfortunately, I never had one. Well, today, you can get Legos that interface with the computer. You plug it into the computer, you can program it, it's robots basically. You can make it do things, there's sensors that can detect light and can touch things and turn around and do all sorts of interesting things. And I think it'd be cool to have one, but I guess I don't have time. It's the main thing. Anyway, I have a good friend that still owns all the Legos he's ever been given or bought himself. He's into the medieval castle set Legos. And so it was only after I became an adult that I owned any sets, and it was just these little small sets. I bought some for our girls, but they were never too intrigued by them. I don't know. So we got rid of them, and I thought we didn't bring any with us, but Elise informed me that we actually accidentally shipped some up with us, but they were donated to Sally's. And so I had to go out and buy this box. Anyway, this is a cool one. Comes in the box. Got these little things here. All the different little bricks. Little pieces, small pieces, flat pieces, long pieces. And I was creating a little thing here. Let's see if I can put it back together. Put that one back there. I think this one goes here. And this one goes that way. Yeah, and then let's see, let me just get this right. It goes down. That doesn't look right. There we go. Piece goes there. Yeah, I can never build anything. Anyway, yeah, see, it's a little blue fish, blue yellow fish, little fin that wiggles, little fins that wiggle on this side. Anyway, so we have here Lego. And you're wondering, why in the world am I playing with Legos? So that I can stay with doing the sermon. Why do we buy Legos? Why do we buy Legos for our kids? For the box to sit there. Maybe it's to, you can spread out all the pieces. To build things. Yeah. they come in bricks of all different sizes and shapes. There are some that are circles, rods, hinges, some shaped like trees, tiles made to look like roads and landscape, small pieces, big pieces, but a brick or a tile by itself isn't very useful. You need more than one. You need a collection of them. But even a collection by itself isn't very useful because by itself it won't turn into something. Even with a set of detailed instructions. The instructions are not going to build this fish. So, Legos need a builder. Someone to bring the pieces to life. Someone with imagination. Someone with creativity. Someone to assemble the bricks together in the right order and in the right places. And obviously, I am not one of them. And so where am I going with all this? Well, I have really no idea. No, actually, I do. Well, maybe I just wanted to play with toys in church, and it's not always that adults get to play with toys in church. No, there is a connection. It might be a little obscure and indirect, but there is a connection. John chapter 1, verses 1 to 4 that we read in as part of the responsive reading. This is from the New Revised Standard Version. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through Him, and without Him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in Him was life, and life was the light of all people. The English word, the capital word, the word for the capital word that you see here in this passage is Greek logos. The root from which logos is derived is lego. So, okay, that's the connection. From what I found, the creator of the Lego toys didn't use this Greek association. The toy name is derived from a combination of two Danish words, which means plays well. But, you know, some of the semantics, some of the meanings associated with the word, the Greek word Lego, do fit the toy Lego. Logos and the root Lego has as its kind of meaning thoughts, speech, reason, wisdom, philosophy. And taking into account how logos is derived from Lego, it has the association of putting thoughts and words together, working through reason, putting things together, a collection of things in the mind and how they're expressed in words. It involves both the inward expressions of thoughts and reason as well as the outward expressions using speech. And so, verse 1 starts out, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. What we see here in the very first verse is a progression as John builds up his argument or his proposition as to what this Word, capital Word, is. In the beginning, it evokes images of the creation, Genesis 1:1, in the beginning. But whereas in Genesis that kind of seems to point to a beginning point in time, the in the beginning in John, the Gospel of John, is more than just a point in time. John uses other phrases and words to describe beginning as the start of something in the rest of his gospel. But here, even though our English doesn't differentiate, the meaning here is one of something that comes before all beginnings. The beginning described here is open-ended. You know, whatever point in time you might think of, this word, this thing that John is about to talk about, already existed. This whole idea of something prior to the beginning of what humans are able to observe wasn't foreign to the people of first century AD. So John is working with something that people already know. The next phrase is, was the Word. John, in this gospel, is writing to primarily to Christians, second generation Christians, who don't have first-hand experience with Jesus, or perhaps not with any of the apostles who had direct contact with Jesus. These Christians are starting to hear some conflicting ideas about who Jesus is. For example, Jesus really isn't God, or God created Jesus and then promoted him to a godlike status. Or Jesus was just a good man who taught people to do good. You know, Jesus taught a set of good philosophies. Or there's even confusion that, well, John the Baptist and Jesus, are they the same? Are they both messiahs? Are they, you know, or is maybe John the Baptist is actually greater than Jesus? There was some confusion about that. There's confusion about, well, by acquiring enough knowledge and wisdom, maybe a person can escape the evils of this life. there's also a set of philosophies starting to creep in to Christianity. Material things are evil, and believers' goals are to escape this material world. And so what John uses is the phrase, was the Word. He begins with the concepts of thoughts, wisdoms, knowledge, and reason, and states that all these things existed prior to any beginnings. So John is taking together all these different ways in which ideas are formed. First in the mind, and then communicated through words. And he takes the idea that wisdom and knowledge, as well as spoken words, could cause the beginnings of material things that were also... And this whole idea that the words, were the beginning of things, of material things, wasn't foreign to John's audience. It was a Greek philosophy, some Greek ideas of how the world began. In fact, the Jewish philosopher Philo, which lived as a contemporary of Jesus and the apostles, taught that the Word was a second God. So John is building upon these familiar ideas to reach his final conclusion. The next phrase, the Word was with God. Now from using English, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot to this phrase. Okay, the Word was with God. It seems like maybe all it's saying is that thoughts and reason, wisdom and knowledge were part of God, were with God. But the word with is much more profound than what we see on the surface. It denotes a close association. It denotes a relationship between the two, between the Word and God. It communicates a sense of communion and intimacy. And so it implies that this Word is simply not some abstract idea, but is a being. Now, John's asserting here that the Word is not simply thoughts and reason, wisdom and knowledge, but an entity that is personal and that can be in a relationship with another entity. So, taken with the previous phrase, was the Word, John asserts that whatever this Word was or is, it was an intimate relationship with God as far back as anyone could imagine. Farther back than even that. Now John's starting to get into concepts that are familiar and orthodox to his Christian readers, but would start to sound foreign to those who are teaching otherwise. And verse 1 ends with the clause, the Word was God. John comes to the first conclusion of his assertions, that this personal entity is an intimate relationship with God, is also God. But note that John doesn't ever say that God was the Word. He says the Word was God, but he never says God was the Word. In many places, John does restate his arguments in the opposite direction. But here he does not, because although the Word is God, God is much more than just the Word. So God can't be just the Word. A part of God is the Word. The thoughts, the reasons, the wisdom, the knowledge, but God is more than just these aspects. And so John, in this very first verse of his gospel, refutes ideas that Jesus was a created being. Even though John hasn't yet made the claim that this Word is Jesus, he refutes that this being that he's talking about, the Word, is a created being. He also refutes the idea that Jesus is an inferior God with a beginning. He refutes that Jesus simply represents some abstract thoughts, reason, philosophies, wisdom, and knowledge of God. And he refutes the idea that Jesus and God are a single being with different aspects. They are two distinct beings that can be in relationship with one another. John uses a progression, starting with one brick, and then building another brick on top of that to build up his argument. I wonder if we could learn something from this method. And we sometimes dump onto others the whole system of beliefs that we have, expecting them to get it immediately. John could have said, oh, Jesus is God, believe it, because I said it. No, but rather John starts out with things that are common and basic that people are already familiar with, people already believe to some extent, and builds up his proposition until he gets to where he shows how true Christianity can't accept some of the claims that were being made. And I wonder, would we do better at times to take things more slowly, starting with foundational bricks, one at a time, and build up the system? Verse 2 reads, He, the Word, was in the beginning with God. And so John reiterates, here's the first example of reiteration in this gospel. He reiterates the proposition that he gave in verse 1 in a different way, primarily for emphasis. Now, the Word existed before all beginnings, and before all beginnings was already in a close relationship, close and intimate relationship and communion with God. That the Word is more than just a set of ideas or philosophies, more than wisdom and knowledge. And the Word is a being with personality and a being that can interact with other beings. John asserts that Jesus was and is an eternal, in other words, no beginning and no end, a divine being. John leaves no room to believe otherwise and still call oneself a Christian. Verse 3 reads, All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. The phrase, all things, the idea here is every material thing that could possibly exist. It's more than just our world here. It includes the entire universe. The next clause reads, came into being through him, the Word. So everything material was created through the Word, a spoken word. So what John's saying here is everything material has and had a beginning point in time. Unlike the Word, material things have a beginning point. What he's also implying is that material things cannot exist apart from a creator. And then the second part of verse 3 reads, Without him not one thing came into being. Well, he just reiterates what he just said in the first half, but turns it into a negative proposition, starting at a different point, but reaching the same conclusion. He emphasizes that all created things have behind it a creator, thereby implying that the creator cannot himself be a created being. John also implies here that material is not inherently evil. Now, there were some non-Christian philosophies and belief systems asserting that material is evil, that our goal is to escape the body. Well, John's saying, no, material in and of itself is not evil. And finally, starting at the very last part of verse 3 and continuing into verse 4, we read, What has come into being, in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. This phrase, what has come into being in him was life. There are two words used in the New Testament that are translated life. One is bios. The other is zoe. Bios is where we get our words like biology and biography. It describes, it's a study of how life works in an organism, how systems function in a living being. It's essentially a study of an individual life. In the New Testament, this word, bios, is associated with the mechanisms of daily living, of finances. Do I have enough money? Do I have enough food? That sort of thing. Then there's the other word, zoe. It's where we get zoology. It's a study of the environment, the habits, the systems, and how other life affect others, living beings. So it's a study of multiple life systems. In the New Testament, the word zoe is associated with the idea of existence, life as existence, rather than life as a system. And I was intrigued to realize that, you know, in the computer world, there's this thing called a BIOS, spelled the same way. But BIOS, B-I-O-S, stands for Basic Input-Output Systems. It's the little part of the computer that has the instructions that take over when power is first switched on. It's the part that initializes the system, loads the operating system, and then hands over the control to the operating system. It's a very necessary part of the computer, but it by itself isn't the computer. It doesn't describe the existence of the computer. Now, the computer needs the rest of it, all the other parts. So, I thought it was interesting that the word BIOS and the computer BIOS seem to have some similarities to it. Likewise, we can learn all about biology. We can learn about how a living being functions, but we can't create or cause to exist a living being. We can take some DNA, but we can't create a brand new being from the DNA. Even cloning is still borrowing life that already exists. A living being can't exist apart from the larger system that supports it. John, in this verse, where he says, what has come into being in him was life. He uses the word Zoe. Talks about existence. He's asserting that the existence of any being, created being, is due to the creative work of the Word. A created being doesn't have the power to create life. Now, as much as I would like this fish to start swimming by itself, I cannot give it life. And this whole idea of who has the power to give life becomes important later in his gospel, where different topics, different discussions on resurrections appear. As I was pondering this whole idea of life as existence, I thought up, came up with some questions for which I really didn't take time to think through or even have answers, but what is the existence? What defines existence? And in light of John's perspective on what life as existence means, how does it affect the way we as Christians should think about life? Does this perspective on life alter the way we think of sanctity of life? And as I said, I have some thoughts for you to ponder, because I don't have answers. The final phrase of verse 4 reads, the life was the light of all people. And note what John doesn't say here again. What John doesn't say is sometimes, or maybe many times, as important as what John does say. What John doesn't say here is that the Word is light. No, what he says is the Word becomes light through life. So what John is asserting here is that the Word, Logos, by itself cannot be light. Logos must be embodied in life to be light. Implying that philosophies, teachings, wisdom, knowledge, and doctrines by themselves cannot be the light. Light has to be all of these things lived out in a being that has life. So what does this mean to us today? Surrounding us, there are many false systems of belief that exist. They're constantly trying to seduce us away from the God of the Bible. There are, very close to us, systems of belief that claim belief in God and Christ, but when examined, the God that they talk about, the Christ that they talk about, does not resemble in any way or form the God or Christ that's taught in the Bible. Many of these belief systems use Christian words, but associate with it different meanings. Salvation, atonement. It's very Christian words. And we attach certain meanings to it, but when some of these other belief systems talk about salvation or atonement, they mean very different things. Some of these belief systems, they work by isolating people, by deceiving, by secrecy. So we have to be careful and vigilant to not become inappropriately engaged with deceptive systems of belief. We need our Christian foundations solidly built. And I think it's also wise to know how the history of our own church worked through some of these things. For example, the whole idea of Jesus Christ as an eternal divine being would have been very foreign in the early years of our church. Many of our prominent founders would have found it very objectionable. They were, in effect, anti-Trinitarian. They were Arian. In other words, they believed that Jesus was a created being. But, to their credit, most of them did come to believe in the Trinity and Jesus Christ as God, although some never did. I think what this points out is that the importance of knowing and believing correct doctrine in some cases is not about salvation, but it is very much about not being deceived. Now, it took some of these founders, some of the early church members, 30, 40, and even 50 years of studying, of learning, and being prodded to come to this, the conclusion, to the realization that, in fact, God exists as three distinct beings. Our historians think that in the early years, God allowed or even perhaps orchestrated erroneous understandings of the Trinity and the nature of Christ, because the other prevailing views in the mid-1800s, late-1800s, weren't correct either. So God wanted Adventists to rebuild this particular foundation of faith from the Bible and Bible only. And when new movements and ideas are being formed, are being studied, God often seems to allow extreme views to take place to make clear distinctions between the old and the new, and then he gently directs the people back closer to the middle. The Gospel of John was written as a protection for Christians and as an apologetic or defense of Christian foundations against false teachings that were already appearing during John's closing years. These false teachings aren't anything new. Well, they're as old as Christianity, and they're here today. Some of them, again, the teaching that Jesus is a created being, or the teaching that by acquiring wisdom and knowledge that Jesus had, we too can escape the evil material world and enter the good spirit world, or teachings about an impersonal God, a God who set things in motion but has no relationships with his creation. We hear these things commonly spoken, and they're not new. As long as Christianity existed, these things were being taught by some. And so I think we would do well to carefully examine, learn, and apply the messages found in the Gospel of John. John speaks to us emphatically today, as he did to the believers at the close of the first century AD. And I think what we communicate and how we communicate it can become light or darkness and bring life or death to those who hear our words. Now, I'm going to suggest that words without lives to back it up only contribute to further darkness in a hearer's mind. And so, in closing, a question for all of us. Do we believe that Jesus is God incarnate and was given existence as a human being, as a man, that through Him living in your life, His light can become yours too? Through this year, and maybe even longer, we're going to be working through the Gospel of John to understand what it is, who Jesus truly is. What did the apostles believe Jesus to be? Who did the apostles believe Jesus to be? Who did Jesus believe himself to be? Because I think that is the one foundation. That is like the cornerstone on which everything else is built. Without a proper and correct understanding, any of us could be deceived.